Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Eretz HaKedesh, is daf Zayin, right in time for Gershi's little bit delayed arrival. So it was all just to make sure that he catches it from the beginning. And we are on the second line, on the top of the daf, and we continue our discussion about whether or not it is mutter to sleep with a bitula on Shabbat. So, says the Gemara that Rabbi Ami, we had a lot of different approaches, and we saw that it was a very complex kind of question. We had the Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, but we weren't sure who said what, and a lot of different issues, whether it's Nogea, the question of Dam being Pokid, is it Michbal, is it Dover Shein Miskaven, what is his main Kavana, is the Halacha like Rabbi Shimon, like Rabbi Yehuda, is there a din of Mekalkal, even by Chavala, and so on and so forth. So we can't give a clear-cut tracing back every step that we would know why we were pasking this way. But Lamaisa Rabbi Ami was matir halacha Lamaisa, which meant that he worked it out that he would not have to worry about these various shitas that were asering, and it would be mutter to sleep with the bitula halacha Lamaisa. Fine, so Rabbi Ami apparently holds the mashmos of the circus, that he holds that it's similar to the idea of Mephis Mursa, that it's sort of like just that the dam is just Mifkat Paki there, and therefore there's no real issur, and similar just like with Mephis Mursa, we're matir lechatchila because of pain. So over here, we're matir lechatchila because of the mitzvah of the Be'ila. So anyway, what happened is that they came to ask Rabbi Ami, what can we do? Am I allowed to take this bitula, even though it's Erev Shabbos. And it's almost Shabbos, doesn't suggest, but it was right before Shabbos. And he said, yeah, it's okay. And because of this, the questions you'd even be able to make, since we end up paskening that we're not worried about Shema Yishchot Ben Of, because if we were, so then he would have answered it because of that, right? So he apparently told his chassid, it's okay, from where Tosfos concludes, that because of that, you see, and this is why nowadays it's nohug, to get married in many places, to get married on Erev Shabbos, even if the wedding meal is on Shabbos, which was running against the sugyas over here for two reasons. There's one of which is the problem of sleeping with the bitula. So now we're saying that's mutter. And the other approach that we had before, I forgot to record you. The other approach that we had before, remember, was that there was a Shema Yishchot Ben Of. Apparently, we're not choshish for that either. And Rabbi Ami paskan halacha l'maisa. This became, by the way, mamish the minag in many places because they couldn't afford to make a separate chasana meal. You can only afford to make one big meal a week. So that's going to be a Shabbos meal. So how can you make a separate chasana meal on the expense of Shabbos and then not have enough money to be able to have your Shabbos meal? I'll tell you a beautiful story that happened to me. This was like 60 years ago. And I was sitting and learning in Tzvat. And I used to sit there alone all day in the Arishul. And by the way, the furniture in that shul ended up being moved, I told you, after the Six-Day War, to the shul that I was davening in Yerushalayim, to Menachem Tzion. It was totally shocking. So I ended up being on the same table that I had.
Not in Rebbe's grandfather's yeshiva in Tveria?
No. You're confusing two issues. Anyway, so there I was sitting alone, and there was an old man that used to come in every day and just sit, and I was very careful. I never talked to anybody because otherwise it would end up being, you know, conversations, which is not why I went there. Okay, so one week, this guy was missing. So he comes back after the end of the week. He really doesn't look good at all. I felt bad, you know, like if he's away for a week, I should find out if he was well and so on. Okay, so I go over to him and I say, is everything okay? So he looks at me and he says, do you know what it's like that for 70 years, you put your hand on the other side of the bed and someone is there, and then all of a sudden they're not there anymore? It's like, whoa, very moving. Anyway, so he had been sitting Shiva for his wife. Okay, so I already for the talk to him. So, okay, so he asked me, what's your name? I tell him my name. So he says, oh, interesting. There used to be someone with that name got married here in Tzfat. I said, yeah, that's my grandfather. And so he says, oh, I had a bracha at the wedding. He's like, only in Tzfat, right? I had a bracha at the wedding. Would you like me to show you where the wedding was? I said, I would love to. So the guy takes me out. And he walks me to where the wedding was, basically in the house, right? Because it was a Friday night. So he says, here was the chuppah. He points to the porch of, this was my grandparents' house. So he points, my great-grandparents' house, the Loberbaum. So he points to the house, says, right there on that porch was the chuppah. And I had a bracha. And then what we did was we walked the chassid and kala around the entire city, which is what, like a 10-minute walk in Tzfat in those days. We walked the chassid and kala around the city, and then we came back and we had this Shabbos Suda, and that was the Suda of the chassid. So all of that was based, and that was standard. All of that was based on this Gemara with the way the Tosfos is Bedayik over here. You see that there's no problem of getting married, even if the suit is going to be on Shabbos. We're not cautious for Shema Yishkot Ben Ov. So, okay. Anyway, so it was very intimate experience for me. So continues the Gemara. So we're talking about this chosin, and Rabbi Ami gave him a heter. So the Rabbanim that were there say, but what kind of heter can you give him if he didn't write a ksuva yet? And Shabbos, there's no time for writing a ksuva. So how is he allowed to sleep with a woman without a ksuva? Because as we'll see, a kala that doesn't have a ksuva is as if you were sleeping with her, not the Shem Kiddushin. So he said to them, okay, give her a mashkin that is worth the ksuva. So take off your watch, give it to the kala. That will be her ksuva temporarily until after Shabbos. And after Shabbos, you'll write out the full ksuva. And this, of course, is only because Lamaisa ksuva is binding even if you don't write it. So we just want to make sure that we have the equivalent, since it was a mokum where they did write a ksuva, that there should be something that is the equivalent of being able to go directly to court and collect. So she has your watch, so fine. Rav Zvid was also matir, shor lamiva b'tchila b'shabbat, ikeri amre. Others say Rav Zvid personally actually took a betula on Shabbat. And Rav Yehuda was matir for Yontif to take a betula, which is mashma that it's only on Yontif. So Rav Papi quotes Rava as saying, don't think that he meant only Yontif and not Shabbos. No, who had been a feel of a Shabbos? Nami Shori. He would have been matir. There's no difference between Yontif and Shabbos. He would have been matir even on Shabbos. It's just that it happened to be that the event that he was called upon to paskin was on Yom Tov. So they asked him, would it be okay to make the wedding tonight? And he said, yes, fine. So, but he would have been matir Shabbos as well. It was just that Maaseh Shehaya, Kach Haya. Whereas Rav Papa disagrees with Rav Papi. And he quotes Rav as saying, no, it was very specific. Rav Yehuda was matir on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbos. So Rav Papi asked Rav Papa, what do you think? What possible difference could there be between Shabbos and Yontif? I'm assuming that the Svara is what's called mitoch. So remember when we learned the Sugya, we have a concept, mitoch shuhutra litzorech, hutra nami shalo litzorech, that anything where the Torah was matir, litzorech ochal nefesh, even, that this was Beis Hillel's Svara in Masechet Beitza, that even if you need to do it and it's not specifically for Tzorach Ochel Nefesh in this case, nonetheless, it's mutter to do. Is that what you're saying? So then let me ask you, Elami Ata Mutar La'asot Mugmar B'Yom Tov? Demitoch Shutra Havara Letzorach Chutra Nami Sholo Letzorach? Is it indeed mutter? The halacha is, and it says Beferish in the Mishnah, that it's usher to make a mugmar. Now, a mugmar was a incense container that they used to put underneath the clothes in a closet so that they would smell good, and or your towels, whatever, and that would be something that in high class places they would do, that everything would have that nice smell to it. So why don't we say that you can do that? Because after all, you are allowed to make a fire on Yontif. So you can add the incense to the fire and put on their clothes. Why not? And yet the Mishnah says you can't. And if you're going to tell me that mitokshu utralet sorech, that if you're allowed to make a fire to cook yourself a steak, so then should be utra shalolet sorech, so then it should be mutter 100% to put it in your closet. So why are we saying that it's usser? Now, this is very problematic, because to say that he suggesting that we don't hold a mitokh, I mean, it's Beit Hillel who says mitokh. I mean, so what kind of weird question is this? Surely he's not coming to argue on the essence of mitokh, is he? So Tosfos says that it could be that something that is always done on Yontif, only that was included in mitokh. But I mean, how often does it come out that somebody has to sleep with a betula on Yontif? I mean, that's not such a constant occurrence. And it's not a constant occurrence to make a mugmar on Yontif. Maybe that's what he held. Okay. In any event, we'll see that there's a different issue that is involved over here, which is how he explains it. So Omar Lay, he said to him that the idea over here, says Rav Papa, if you'll notice the lashon of the pasuk and you'll be medayik, then you'll understand why it's not mutter. Alecha amar kra, ach asher ye'achel l'chol nefesh. Explain to me what the word l'chol nefesh means. Something which is eaten by everyone. I don't understand. If it's not a food that everybody likes, so then you're not allowed to prepare l'yantif. What does l'chol nefesh mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means that Yontav, you could do a malacha of the type that would be something that everyone views as being important to Yontav. Okay? How many people really feel that it's important on Yontav to have incense burning? I mean, it's not like an important activity. It's very high class people that are going to have incense. How many people feel that sex is an important part of Yontif? Everybody. That's l'kol nefesh. Mugmar is not l'kol nefesh. So how are you going to compare the two? It's ridiculous. Omale Rav Achabre, the Rebbe of Rashi, I don't understand. So what is he saying? It literally has to be l'kol nefesh. Let's say that you had an opportunity to get venison on Yontif. So now, all of a sudden, you find in your trap a deer. You've been waiting for months to get a deer. I mean, it's expensive, very hard to find. So you're telling me, well, you're not allowed to cook venison because, I mean, only rich people can afford venison. Is that what you're going to tell me? Because it's not shovel chol nefesh. Oh, Malay, don't be silly. We're talking about that the not this particular thing is everybody has. I never said it has to be the most regular thing. You're right, it's not regular, but eating, I think, is a tzorech l'chol nefesh. What's the difference whether this is the food that is l'chol nefesh? And a tzvi is just as much needed as food by everybody. That's the does it fill your nourishment requirements? Yes. If you need to eat, will you eat venison? Yes. Okay, fine. So then that's the l'chol nefesh. You don't have to analyze the particular case. The same thing is true over here. Do you need to sleep with a betula? No. But does sex fulfill a purpose, a normal purpose? Yes. Fine. So then that's all that's involved. In which case, we're matir on Yontif, but only on Yontif because of mitokh and not on Shabbos. That's what I hold that Reb Yehuda was saying. On Reb Yaakov Bar Idi, you should know that Reb Yochanan paskind that it's usher livol betchila b'Shabbat, and he said this in Sayedan, which of course is in Barnea's neighborhood, but Barnea is busy visiting some other neighborhood. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean hora? Are you sure you got that right? Because I never heard somebody use the word hora'ah to say something is usher. Why not? Because any jerk can say something is usher. Like, you don't have to know anything to say something is usher. If you want to say something is mutter, now we're talking. So you'd have to say it was a hora'ah. I understand. Wow. This person analyzed the situation. He understood the halacha, and he was willing to stand up and say, I don't care if everybody's nervous. I'm telling you, it's mutter. But to stand up and say, no, it's usher. Who doesn't do that? So that's not called a hora'ah. I think maybe you got it wrong. If it said he was more, probably it says Rabbi Yochanan was more leheter, right? So mika hora'ah, do we use the word quote, hora'ah, unquote, for iser? Says the Gemara, yes, sometime, if it really is a hora'ah. For instance, we had the Mishnah in Nazir about a terrible story of poor Halina Amalka, whose son went off to war. And she was in Chutz Laaretz, and she made a neder that if her son comes back alive from the war, so then she is going to be a Nazira. She keeps 7 years of Naziras, right? And then she comes to Eretz Yisrael, and she wants to complete her Naziras. So Hillel says to her, I'm really sorry, my dear queen. However, in Chutz Laaretz, you were Tameh because of Eretz Amim. So now you have to start another 7 years of your Naziris because you were Metame the first Naziris. My God. And we called that a Hora'ah. Well, I guess you got to have a lot of nerve to say that. But anyway, so we definitely do find a word, Hora'ah, used even for Isra. I'll bring you another place. How about the Braita? The Braita says that a spinal cord that was cut through, most of it was cut through, is a trefa. So says Rabbi Yaakov Omer, even if it's got a tiny hole in it, like a pinhole, it's also a trefa. And hora, here we find Rabbi Yaakov, hora, Rabbi, like Rabbi Yaakov, to be machmer even on a pinhole. And so you see that we do use the word hora'ah, where somebody's making a very powerful statement where he tells you there's no doubt about it. Okay, Lemaisa, just by the way, says Ravuni, you know, we don't paskin like that. We don't paskin that a little pinhole is enough to make it a trefa. It's only if it really is a slit, which is beruf. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak actually taught it a little bit differently. Masnehachi, Omer Rabbi Abohu, that Rabbi Shmuel ben Yaakov from Tzor asked Rabbi Yochanan inside on, and I want you to know, I was there and I heard this. So I'm not just telling you hearsay evidence. I heard this myself. Mahu liv ol betchila b'shabbat. Is it or is it not mutter? And he said to him, I heard him say to him, usher. And that was where the psak from Rabbi Yochanan was quoted. But lamaisa hilchata mutar liv ol betchila b'shabbat. Omer Bichalba, Omer Ravuna, Omer Rav Bar Zavda, Omer Rav. This halacha, now the reason that this, if you'll notice what's happened here, is that we've been talking about the way in which you can get into a situation without much advance notice, because we're talking about over here, the guy wasn't sure that he would be able to get married on Shabbos until he went and asked Ravidi. And it was so close to Shabbos, it wasn't Shabbos already, that we even have a problem of, so how were you allowed to sleep with this woman? It's all very nice that in terms of Shabbos, it's mutter, but you can't sleep with a woman without a ketuvah, right? That leads us to another issue, because you also cannot sleep with a woman without a bracha, which is amazing. You're going to see about that. And that is the transition now of our sugya into the dinim of Sheva Brachot. The Sheva Brachot don't necessarily mean 7 days of Brachot. It means the 7 Brachot that are made sometimes 1 day in the case of an almana, sometimes 7 days in the case of a betulah, sometimes when there's panim chadashas, not when there's no panim chadashas, so on and so forth. But because all of that is part of the absolutely necessary hachana to be able to sleep with a woman, so then it's included over here, and this will lead us tomorrow into an examination of all of the brachas of Sheva brachas and where they come from, which of course is going to lead us to the same question of Sheva Brachos at a funeral, and all of the issues that we've seen are intimately interrelated, which is marriage, reproduction, death, burial. We found all of this connected at the very beginning of Ki Yikach Ish Isha. That's the Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron, as we pointed out when we first met the Sugya here. Now, so this is the transition. That's why it's easy to understand where we're going over here. And therefore, Rabbi Chalbo brings over here that Achat Bitula, the Achat Almana to Una Bracha. We're going to get into the differences. We're going to be getting into the details, but we're going to see that as far as the din of saying these Sheva Brachas at the Chuppah, that is true both of an Almana and of a Bitula. Really? Did Ravuna say that you have to say Sheva Brachas for an Almana? Ha'omar Ravuna Almana ain't not to una bracha. Ravuna said beferish that you do not make a bracha on an Almana. Well, Kasha, kan be bachur shenasa Almana, where he says over here, achas Almana, the achas betula, that is referring to a man who was ever married before, and over there he makes a bracha. But where he said that you don't make a bracha, that's referring to a man who is a widower, and he is marrying himself a widow. In that case, we don't make the bracha. What? That's not true, says the Gemara. Almon shenas almana lo. If a man who was previously married marries an almana, and remember, almana means bichlal over here, whatever the case is, it's not necessarily almana. Obviously, it's the same thing if she's a divorcee. But the point is that she's been previously married. But Reb Nachman said that actually Huna Bar Nasan told me himself, the Braita, Tana, Ninai in the Birkat Chatanim Ba'asara. How do we know that we only make Sheva Brachos when there's 10 people? Shenemar Vayikach Asara Nashim Miziknei Ha'ir Vayomer Shavupo Vayeshevu. So Boaz took those 10 people because that was when he was marrying Ruth. So you see that you need 10 people to make a Sheva Brachos. And Boaz himself had been previously married, because if Boaz is Ifzan, Ifzan is identified as having 30 sons and 30 daughters. Well, he must have been married for a long time before he got to this last day of his life, according to some, in which he married Ruth. So how do you say that there's no din of a Sheva Brachos on an Almana? No, of course there's a Sheva Brachos on an Almana. But what Ravuna meant was you don't have 7 days of Sheva Brachos of an Almana. Remember, people always confuse those questions. They think Sheva Brachos means 7 days of Brachos. This is not what it means. It means 7 Brachot. Now, how many days do you say those 7 Brachot? What Ravuna is saying is that you do not need a bracha of Sheva Brachos for 7 days, but you certainly need a Sheva Brachot at the wedding itself. And so the difference is that what Ravuna was saying is that it's only 1 day that you would need Sheva Brachos. Oh, machlokas, whether it's 1 se'udah or is it as many se'udahs as you would eat during that day. Fine, but we'll talk about that at the end of the sugya. Ask the Gemara, but the problem is, Elohada Tanya, what about the Braita that says, Shakdu Chachamim Al Takanot Benot Yisrael, remember that we had the discussion about an almana as well, that there was a din of shakdu. And the din of shakdu with an almana was that we wanted to make sure that the bride would have 3 days with her husband. We discussed that yesterday. So now, tell me what those shlosha yomim are. And I'm assuming that those days in which they're going to be hanging out together, and it's yumei simcha that we were geyser because of shakdu, that those are concretely the times where you need to make the Sheva Brachos. I mean, it makes sense that it's the same issue, right? So how do you explain that? Can you tell me what kind of marriage? B'mai, are we talking about where the man was ever married before and he's a bachur? Didn't you just say a minute ago that a bachur that marries an almana does require Sheva Brachot? That's what you said before. So are we giving up on that now? So what we're talking about over here is that there is, we said, there is an almana that requires 7 days of Sheva Brachos. There's an almana that doesn't. So what are we talking about over here? If we're talking about a Bachur, you said we need 7 days. So why does it only say 3 days? And if we're talking about an Almon, you said it's only 1 day. So now I don't understand. Here it says, and we just had this whole sugya, we want her to get married, to sleep together with him on a Thursday night, so that Friday morning he doesn't go to the office, remember? And that way he's got 3 days with her, so he has Thursday of the wedding, Friday where he's feeling woozy and okay and relaxed with her, and Shabbos where he's going to anyway stay home. So now there's no such din, because either you make Sheva Brachos 1 day or you make Sheva Brachos 7 days. I never heard of making Sheva Brachos for 3 days. Well, it's not really a problem. I could tell you that the Braisa might be talking about where the man was in fact married before, and there's no contradiction. What makes you think that the din of Shakdu and the number of days that you're supposed to be hanging out, having a nice breakfast together, equals the number of days that you have to make a Sheva Brachos? It's not the same at all. Maybe for Sheva Brachos, there's only 1 day, the day of the wedding itself, or the next day. And 3 days, that's something else. That's a simcha to provide the woman an opportunity to hang out with the chassid. Or I could say, it could be that the Braita is talking about a bachur, and there are 7 days, but there's only 3 days to hang out. Why is that a contradiction? If you end up making a special suda for the chassid and the kala, even if it was a kala who is an almana or a divorcee, you'll make a Sheva Brachos. But they don't have to go and spend 7 days outside of the office and so on. Those can be two totally different questions. And you're jumping to conclusions by assuming that it's all the same thing. I don't see any reason to assume that it's all the same thing. So what we're talking about over here is the possibility that there may be two totally different takonas that we're talking about over here, and that they would have different. Now, some learn that these are two alternative answers, but most learn that these are actually, it all works out together, and that we hold of both of these answers. They're not a contradiction at all. What's the explanation? I mean, I'm sure it strikes you as being strange that on the one hand, we're saying if the Bachur marries an Almana, so then you have more days of Bracha than you have days of Simcha. Whereas if a widower marries an Almana, so then you end up with more days of Simcha than Bracha. That's why it looks like these are two alternative answers, right? But it's not really a problem, as the Ran explains, because there's two totally different issues. The bracha is an expression of the chassan's joy. And a chassan who is a bachur has greater joy that he's finally able to get married. He was never married before. He will always have 7 days of that simcha expressed in the bracha. Even if he's marrying an almana, he doesn't care. He's happy at the fact that this is his first opportunity to be married, and he invests in it with the joy of a bracha. Masha Enke, the question of Simcha, which is not going to the office, that's called Bitul Malacha. We didn't do that for the male. We did that for the Kala, right? And therefore, the idea over here of Shakdu is that the Chachomim felt that a woman needs a minimum of 3 days of investment, even though she was married before. And it is not necessary, once she was already married, she will not feel, by giving her a Sheva Brachos, she'll feel that it's much more formal than real. She doesn't take all of this jazz. She's been married before. She's seen it all. She's got a little bit of cynical kind of feelings about the whole thing anyway. It's very nice. You give me 3 days of attention. I don't need 7 days of attention, and I don't want 7 days of attention. So over there, when we make the takona of shakdu, it's for the woman, and it's entirely different issues. And therefore, Tainan is the Ran. These things work out perfectly well. It doesn't, they don't have to be in the same proportion. They're totally different visions. Okay, so therefore, most Paskin exactly like that. And that both of these things are true. Both the Iboy Sema Ba'amon and the Iboy Sema for Bahur. And it would end up that therefore, both of these were true. So if either of them were never married before, Sheva Brachas is a 7-day Sheva Brachas. If both of them were married before, then you only make Sheva Brachas for one day. As far as the question of how many days of actual Simcha and taking off from work you need, that's a different issue. If she is a Betula, then you have to give her 7 days. That's what she needs for easing into this new relationship. If she was married before, so then you don't have to give her 7 days, but your shaktu is to give her 3 days. Fine. So this would be the way that most actually learn. And that's the Rambam's approach as well, and many of the other Rishonim. And therefore, it works out very, very well. And we say both Iboisen. Meisvei. Question is it really true that if an almana marries a bachur, that there are 7 full days of Sheva Brachas? Here it says, Mivorchim lebetula shiv'a. It says, for a non-married woman, never married before, she's a virgin, we give her 7 days of Sheva Brachas, but for an almana, we give her 1 day. Now that says that every almana gets only 1 day of Sheva Brachas, right? My lava filo almana shenisait lebachor. It doesn't matter whether the male had been married previously or not, because otherwise, why wouldn't it have said in the Braita the difference? So it's going, no. It's talking about over here, la almana means an almana who's marrying an almon. Ah, oh, come on. So what? So if she married a bachur, what? Then she does need shiva? So yachin, then why didn't the Braita simply say it that way? It could have said, mevorchin lebetula shiva. And the same thing would be true about an almana, shenisait lebachur, would be shiva. I mean, throw that in. Ula almana, yom echad. And then we would understand that if it's an almana who is not marrying a bachur, then it would be yom echad. Wouldn't that be a much more thorough way of giving it over? No, not necessarily, because a braita can oftentimes avoid complexities. And it wants to tell you what's called a milta psikta. Milta psikta is just an easy rule to keep in mind. Sheva brachas for dummies is what the braita is saying. And therefore it's saying, if she's a betula, there's never less than 7 days of sheva brachas. And if she's an almana, there's never less than 1 day of sheva brachas. Now, if you want to talk about the specific case, ask your local Orthodox rabbi is what the Braisa is saying when it's coming to tell me a psikta. Gufa. Let's get back into the story that Reb Nachman said that I heard from Huna Bar Nasa and from a Braita. The Braita said, how do we know that you need 10 people for sheva brachas? Shenema vayikach asara nashim mizikneya ir vayomer shvupo. And Rabbi Avo says, no, I have a different pasuk. Now, this is interesting, a whole different idea. We learn it actually from Tehillim, where over there it says, b'makelot borchu Elohim, Hashem mimekor Yisrael. How do I read that? If you're going to be borchu Elohim on issues of reproduction, mimekor, issues of reproduction, then it has to be b'makelot. And makelot, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, hakilu et ha'eda, and an eda we know is 10 people, from the story of the Meraglim, ein eda p'chuta ma'asara, so therefore a makela would have to have 10 people. So you see from there, you have to have a kahal, and a kahal means you've got enough mikor Yisrael to bless issues of the womb. And how does Reb Nachman, I mean, what does he do with this pasuk? Such a nice pasuk. Mahai krod Rabbi Abo, my dorish be. No, he says it means like this. Rabbi Meir always said, minai in shafilu ubarim b'me'i iman, omru shira layam, famous medrash that we've spoken about. How do we know that even the fetuses that were in their mother's womb when they were standing on the Yam Suf, they all joined in to the Shira. Shene'emar b'makelot baruchu Elohim, Hashem mimekor Yisrael. But this has nothing to do with the issues of Makor. It means fetus in a Makor. That's how I understand the pasuk the way that Rabbi Meir. So what about Rabbi Abohu? Why does he think that that's not the correct way to read the pasuk? Because it's irrelevant to us whether the fetus is in the womb or the fetus is simply covered over by the woman's belly. We don't talk about wombs unless we're talking about that which provides the nourishment and so on. I mean, why are we talking about the womb? It should have said, mi beten, while they're still in the beten. It's always the way we refer to someone in the beten, right? So that's mi beten imi atagozi, from my mother's stomach. Do I need to care whether it's a womb or not? So if you're talking about the womb, it must have something to do with reproduction. And therefore, I darshan it to mean, if you need to make a bracha on reproduction, then this is the way to make the bracha with makelot, and you're going to need 10 people. So therefore, lemakor mi beten. Why does it say mi makor? It must be it's coming to tell me on issues of the makor. And what does Rabbi Abou do with the pasuk of Boaz, where it says that he took asara zakenim? Nah, says Rabbi Abou, what's the matter with you? Why in the world would he take zakenim? As we're going to say, what, he's not allowed to get married with a bunch of nice young yeshiva bochrim that'll dance at the kuppah. He's got to take a bunch of old people. I mean, the point over here is that he's taking talmidei chachamim, because he needed to be derish the pasuk of Amoni, velo Amoni, that he was mekabel, but kach mekublani, moavi velo moavit, and that needed to be established as the halacha before he was able to go and start this whole business about root and everything, right? Because, I mean, what do you think? He's akadaitach levracha, but the way you're learning the pasuk, that he gathered 10 people to make a bracha, for God's sake, he had to gather 10 old fogies. Bosagid alav zakenim. Let him get himself some nice chayalim, and they'll dance, and everything will be really much, much more simcha, no? And why didn't Reb Nachman take that approach? Because Reb Nachman says, look, the way you're learning that if it was just to be derish, whoever heard of needing 10 people to say a drasha? I understand for a bracha, yes, we have a whole takana. There are certain brachas that are only said in a tzibur. Fine, so this is one of those brachas. But, I mean, why would Boaz need 10 people to dafka? Well, it's not good enough to have 3 people. Says the Gemara, no, actually, I'll prove to you that if you are trying to spread around a new halacha and you want it to get around, then indeed there is an issue to get 10 people involved. So just like Shmuel told Rav Chana, who came from Baghdad, to Rashi goes out of his way to explain, yes, you heard about this town called Baghdad, and here's where it is. And he brings Chuvis, where Baghdad is mentioned. He said to Rav Chana, Pokva Aitili Be Asara, bring me 10 people so that I can tell you right in front of them, and it gets out, Amizakel Ubar Kana, that if somebody wants to transfer property to a fetus, he can do that. It's not different than transferring property to a katan. With your das, the dat acheret makne, you can transfer it to a fetus. By the way, hilchata mizakaluber lo kana. Don't think that's how we pass it. But anyway, we're just bringing the fact that he said, I need 10 people because I want the halacha to get around. So you see that when you want a halacha to be mefursam, and you went out of your way to see that it's going to get around, that you do it bedavka. It's true. You do it bedavka with 10 people. Okay, so it turns out that we have 2 different psukim. One is Vayikach Asara Anashim Mizikney Ha'ir, and so on. And that goes on to say, Ki Kol Ha'am Asher B'Shar V'Azakenim, they were Bohu, Yitein Hashem Asayisha Abal Beitcha K'Rachel U'Chilei'a Asher Bonu Shetehem Et Beit Yisrael. Okay, so that's one place, and it says, it's very interesting, that in Masechet Kala, it says, how do we know there's a mitzvah to be mevorach birchat chatanim? from Rivka, because there it says, Vayavorchu et Rivka vayomru lachotenu ata yilal fe rivava. V'yiraj zarech et shar oivav. Interesting. Which means, Tosus brings a raya from there, right here on the dot, that you see that you're supposed to be Mavorach, that's Birchas Erison, because he was just giving her the Kiddushin over there. But you see from there that you make a Birchas Erison for a woman who is accepting Kiddushin from a Shliach, because over there Eliezer Eved Avram was a Shliach. So one of them is the bracha for Birchat Chatanim, and the other one is the bracha for the Kala, which are basically the only two places that we have the two issues, both the Chosin and the Kala in the Torah Gufa. So if you take a look, it's very interesting. Each one of those psukim have 15 words, which of course, as Rabbi Barnea will tell you, is the number of words of Birchas Kayanim. And each one has exactly the same gematria, 4,462. Absolutely nutty. What in the world is that all about? But anyway, it puts us together, the Birchas Chasanim with the Birchas Erison. This was Rav Auerbach and Rav Yankel Auerbach in Yerushalayim put out a sefer with these gematrias and so on. And it's fascinating. Anyway,
what about Malei Shvua Zot for 7 days? That's not about bracha, but that's a makor for 7 days, no?
Yeah, we'll be talking about Sheva Brachos later. We're talking about only the bracha here. Tana Rabbani, Mevorachim Birchat Chatanim Bebeit Chatanim, and Reb Yehuda Omer Af Bebeit Erusin. Now, this is fascinating, that if you're going to be getting married, and the only place to make that bracha is in the Beit Chatanim, where you actually got married. That's where you say the Birchat Chatanim. And it could be also in the house of the Chosin, because the house of the Chosin is essentially the chuppah, the extension of the chuppah. So the fact is that there are some Rishonim, and the Svardim Paskin this way, very, it's like one of their favorite things to wave and to smash Ashkenazim with, you know. That in fact, the Gemara says you can only make a Sheva Brachos with Beit Chatanim. So if you invite over the Chosin and the Kala, and you're an Ashkenazi and you want to make a Sheva Brachos in their honor, they will get up and leave the table because it's a Brachal of Atala, it's an Iser Gomor. I've been so shocked by this guy. It's like one of the big issues. There's some chuvis of some of these Sephardim rabbis. If he's an Ashkenazi, is it okay if you participate? And he makes it, no, Chas v'chalila, it's a brachal of Atala. Don't say a berach. Anyway, fine. So this is one of the big issues. Can you make a Sheva Brachas with the Birchas Sheva Brachas in a place which is not where they actually got married or is not a house that belongs to the Chassid? But here, Rabbi Yehuda adds that you even make a Sheva Brachas in the house where you only made an Erison, which is weird. Because, I mean, remember that in those days, the Erison could be 12 months before the Chuppah, right? For some reason, it says to make the Birchas HaChuppah. I mean, for us, not Nogea, because the Erison and the Chuppah are in the same place, the same moments almost. Here it says, even the Beit HaErison. What's the meaning of that? Omer Abaye, here's the meaning. What Rabbi Yehuda was referring to was the situation in Yehuda. So remember, we've had many times that in Yehuda, they wanted a Chosin and Kala to be alone together. Now, there's a number of reasons for this. The historical reason for it, as is brought to Yerushalmi, the historical reason for it is basically that there was the whole problem of the Romans who bedafka would take any betula, right? So then, okay, I mean, the Yerushalmi says it goes back to the fact that in the Yerushalmi, the story is that Yehuda killed Esav. And if Yehuda killed Esav, they wanted to take it out on the Jews when Esav was trying to prevent Yaakov from being buried. So we have the whole story, we have Chushim ben Dan. Okay, in any event, so this was the way that they were going to get back that the kala should always be nivelet to a Roman first, not only to the governor, but whoever was the local Roman official. So the as I say, the historical issue was that they were afraid that the woman might actually, okay, what the heck, if I'm going to have this happen, I might as well enjoy it. So she would give herself over to the Roman, which could end up in certain circumstances making her asura to her husband, right? So because of that, they wanted her to feel close to her husband before, so they put them together. Now, afterwards, this became a rather modern kind of issue, which in Yehuda, they felt that this business of making a shidduch where the boy and girl don't even know each other, then all of a sudden throwing them together on the night of their wedding and expecting them to feel relaxed about having intimacy is insane. And therefore, they wanted to give them a chance to get to know each other. Now, the problem is when you get to know each other, you also get to know each other, and that could be a problem. And you have to put them together. So if you're putting them together, obviously she cannot be a Nida. You can't be alone with a Nida. But the other problem is, and this is how it connects to the sugya before. The other problem is if you're putting them in a situation where they might end up in bed together, then she would be asura to him unless you made a bracha. Because a kala without a bracha is asura to her husband. Moshe Forman, you missed important cards, which was Psikresha Delo Nechale. We had a whole discussion on. Please make sure that you take care of it. Listen to the recording. Anyway, getting back to this. So because of that, they not only had her go to the mikveh, they also said the bracha of the chuppah. That way, if they end up sleeping together, then fine, there's nothing wrong. The pashtus is that the only reason that we say that a boy and girl who are Arusim should not be sleeping together is because of the fact that there is no bracha, because kala below bracha is asura. So if we make the bracha before, so what's the big deal? So they'll end up in bed together. It's even better. If they end up being so intimate that they'll be very happy when they get to the chuppah, then basically they're already married. So we don't really care, but we do want to make sure that it's all done properly. So besides going to the mikveh, we would actually make the bracha. Anyway, that's what happened in Yehuda. Remember, we had this discussion about in Yehuda, there's tremendous differences, whether you can expect her to be a betula or not, or since they have the girl and the boy together, why would you expect her to be a betula? We'll get to those issues later. Anyway, so therefore, says Abaya, this halacha was said dafka in Yehuda, because over there, they're alone together. Tanya Idach, there's another braita that says, Bevorchim birkat chatanim bebet chatanim. And you make a bracha on the kala birkat erusin, bebeta erusin. What is birkat erusin? Oh, Ravin baravada, varaba baravada, tarvamish beidruvida amre, bruchata Hashem lokenu melech haolam, asher kidishanu bemitzvotav, vitzivonu al ha'arayot, va'asar lanu et ha'arusot, v'itir lanu et ha'nesuot. Now we put in the word ha'nesuot lanu, because obviously there's going to be people to say, oh, as long as they're married, we can all sleep with them, right? No. Okay. So, Anesuot Lanu, if she's married to you, you understand? Okay. So, Al Yedei Chupa V'Kiddushin. Now, this is very strange. What do you mean, Chupa V'Kiddushin? What comes first, Chupa or Kiddushin? Why did it say Al Yedei Kiddushin V'Chupa? I mean, you must admit that that's an awfully funny kind of girsa to have. How is it Chupa V'Kiddushin? So, interestingly enough, the point is that since Lamaisa, we have this idea of the chuppah, because first of all, there's a number of different approaches. So the Rosh says, well, if you would say stam, the bra, why bichlal do we mention chuppah, right? I mean, we're talking about Birchas Erusin. It could have been 12 months before the chuppah. So we do that, says the Rosh, because we're afraid that people will think that the bracha on Kiddushin is what will be mater her to her husband. So because of that, no, we stress that it's chuppah, so that even though he's mater lona sanesuot, the hiter lona sanesuot is only after chuppah. And that's why we put the chuppah first. But others say, other Rishonim say, the Mordechai says that if the Kiddushin is like today, where it takes place under the chuppah, so then basically you went under the chuppah before the Kiddushin. So you say, the chuppah v'kiddushin. Now, there is a beautiful svara over here that the Bala Itur says, that you don't say chuppah v'kiddushin. The problem is that people stopped knowing the difference between a vait, rafa, and a vav, because they pronounce a vait like a vav. And since they do that, and anybody who pronounces the bracha properly would have said chupa v'kiddushin as a vait, because whenever you have the letter that comes after an oat of a hey, chupa, or an olive, or a vav, or a yud, but the point is, you had it after a hey, so you don't say chupa b'kiddushin, you pronounce it chupa v'kiddushin. But people who think that ve is how to pronounce a vav mistook that for chupa v'kiddushin, which is how they pronounce vav, chupa and kiddushin. That's how the bracha got totally messed up. But the correct bracha is chupa v'kiddushin, through a kiddushin before the chupa, which is beautiful. And Rav Acha, Breda Rava, says, no, you left out a piece. You have to end with the words, Baruch Atah Hashem, Bikadesh Yisrael, Al Yedei Chupa V'Kiddushin. What's the machlokas about whether you have an ending to this? So the difference is, Mandalo Chatim, where we said that you just end before saying Baruch Atah Hashem at the end, it's just like any other bracha. You make a bracha on eating an apple. You make a bracha on a mitzvah. You have something at the end? No. Man dechatim, Masha Enkin, Rav Acha, Brei de Rava. He says, well, if you make Kiddush, you say something at the end of Kiddush, and this is similar to Kiddush, right? So if that's the case, you should, because this is Kiddush, and Kiddush is our Rashi, this is Kiddush, so Kiddush is Kiddush. So if you're going to make an ending on Kiddush, so Mikadesh HaShabbat, and so on. That is the same thing that you should do over here. Mikadesh Amo Yisrael. Now, Tosus disagrees. He says it's not because it's similar to Kiddush. Remember that Rashi's understanding, a bracha aruka does not mean it's got a lot of words in it. It's because it has different issues in it. That's the point. And the idea over here is that Kiddush, and this has to do, to some extent, with the different nuschaot of Kiddush. There are many people who daven Ashkenaz and who say, Ki hu yom techila lemikrei kodesh, zecher letziat mitzrayim. That is not part of Kiddush. What the heck is it doing? Why are we talking about techila lemikrei kodesh? We should be talking about dafka the inyonim of Kiddush and the fact that today is Shabbos and not Chol. That's what Kiddush is about. Therefore, it's considered to be, says Rashi, a brocha aruka, because it has in it two different issues. And as soon as you start putting in other issues, whether it's a bakasha, halkein kel chai tzureinu malkeinu tzave lahatzu, and so on, those are different issues. Put a tefillah in the middle, you put an insight into the nature of Shabbos as mikra kodesh, and then you have to make an ending on it, because now you've confused the focus of the bracha, right? So you go over again what the idea is before the ending, and then you put in the ending. So therefore, even though over here we don't have that confusion, but nonetheless, we add it over here because it's similar to the nature of Kiddush. Tosfos says that's the point over here, is that it's a complex bracha, like the Birkas HaTorah, where we have all of that stuff in the middle. And because of that, even though it's all focused on the same idea, so to say where it's us or where it's mutter and so on, so it's similar, therefore, to the Birkas HaTorah and so on. Okay, in any event, that concludes our fascinating discussion for the day.